Well, New Zealand, for the first time, is hosting the World Science Fiction Convention later this year, a huge deal for the country's writers in a popular genre that now encompasses, well, dozens of sub-genres. Game of Thrones fans will be interested to know that one of the convention's guests of honour is George R.R. Martin. Then again, they might prefer he stays at home and spends the time writing the finale to the epic fantasy series. With me, one of the convention organisers, Darusha Wayne. Kia ora, welcome.
Hi.
And Mandy Hager and Hannah Parry are here to talk also about literary speculative fiction. Thank you both for coming in.
Kia ora.
Hi.
Well, let's have a look at this big deal for New Zealand. First time hosting the World Science Fiction Convention. Darusha, how big is this going to be and how significant is this for our own writers?
Well, it's going to be quite big. We already have about 1,700 confirmed attending members, and usually that number increases as we get closer to the convention. And for local science fiction fantasy fans and creators, it is a massive deal. This is the biggest science fiction fantasy conference in the world. It's where the Hugo Awards are given out, and members can vote on those honors. And there are a ton of events. There's events for people who just want to participate by watching or looking at art or comics or involved in writers' panels. It's soup to nuts, and it's going to be a huge week of activities.
Okay, that might be the first time we've had that phrase on the show. But let's look at, I mean, for the New Zealand literary scene, I mean, you're writing this as well, the three of you. Is it a growing scene? Are you seeing more speculative fiction, science fiction from our New Zealand writers? We've always had it, but I just wondered, what do you think, Mandy?
I think that we are more in the mainstream. I think it's been written for a long time, but it's certainly getting more visibility these days, which I think is a nice thing. Yeah.
And you've just published, and congratulations, The Unlikely Escape of Uriah Heep.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and what got you excited and wanting to write in this? It's a genre within a genre, isn't it? Literary speculative fiction.
It is in a way, yes. Yeah, and I guess at the time from growing up, I've never really seen the boundaries as clearly, I think, as some people are. I mean, because I know when I grew up and I started reading books and started being told books, there was never any distinction really made, I think, in children's books between fantasy books and contemporary books. And, you know, is Beatrix Potter an animal story, or is it a fantasy, or is it whatever? And I think, even though that becomes far more defined when you get older and, when you get into adult fiction, but I've never really seen why there needs to be a boundary between literary fiction and between fiction that has speculative elements and between fantasy and so forth.
We are, as a species, though, we quite like to put labels on things, Darusha, don't we? So I think I'm right in saying there are so many subgenres now within that science fiction umbrella.
Definitely. And it's not just science fiction. Science fiction, fantasy, and horror tend to be known as the speculative genres. Mm-hmm. But within that, there's time travel, alternate history, near future, far future, space opera, sword and sorcery. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And it's like Hannah said, when you really get into it, so much of fiction, in fact, all fiction is speculative to a certain extent. We're making up a story. And even if the elements of that story are the same as the world in which we live, there is an element of what if and making things up, which is what the speculative genres are all about.
What I've noticed on the page and also on screen, particularly perhaps with the streaming services, is speculative fiction which is near future, and I think you've noticed that, Mandy, too, and that's quite disconcerting when it's years and years has just been on UK TV, which I thought was outstanding British work, and it was really just at the start a few years ahead, and you could go, I get it, this is possible.
It's hair-raising, yeah. And I remember it kind of, you can look at it from any time too. I remember reading Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale when it was first published, and at that stage it seemed like she was writing about maybe the way the Taliban were treating women, and you read it now and you think actually she's writing about something that could be next year in the States. So I think that something can still feel fresh if it really keys into the way that humans behave. It will always feel fresh, so it makes it really interesting. And I think now we're seeing a lot of climate change fiction, and I think we'll see more and more of that as people try and get their heads around it, really.
Yes, I mean, I've read several New Zealand examples of that in the last couple of years too, really, you know, really strong writing. Mm. What interests you about, when you're coming to this, it's such a big blank page, isn't it, speculative fiction, yeah. Hannah, but what do you want to write about?
I think for me, speculative fiction's just, which is kind of what Mandy was saying, it's just always a way of thinking about things that are happening now or things that interest you about, but putting them in a slightly different light, you know. So, yeah, if you want to write about, yeah, something that interests you from history, something that's interesting you in the present day, something that's interesting you about human behaviour that you've noticed, but you can, with speculative fiction, you can kind of take that element and you can amplify it and you can, yeah, you can cast a new light on it, but also exaggerate it in ways that, yeah, that are interesting and thought-provoking, I think.
Darusha, what of all these genres, what do you like to write?
I write mainstream fiction as well as science fiction, so I do both. In science fiction, what I like to take out of the speculative element is both using the speculative as a way of amplifying something that I'd like to talk about in the real world that we live in now, which is something that speculative fiction has always done. But I also am interested in conducting thought experiments about how our future might look. So I tend to write both near and far future science fiction, where I'm sort of taking that element of what could a future human civilization look like and really diving deep into that as a way of figuring out how we could make a better world.
It tends to be dystopian, though, doesn't it? Very few writers seem to look ahead and go, it's going to be fantastic.
You know? There's more hopeful science fiction coming out now, though, I think,
really?
As a perhaps a reaction to the world in which we live. I mean, you see both. And one of the things that people have said about my work is that I write hopeful dystopias and realistic utopias. So I tend to take that extreme perspective, but then show how it might be a bit subverted. But there's definitely a lot of hopeful science fiction out now. It's becoming more of a popular sort of genre. Books that either take a dystopia and figure out how to get out of it, or just are trying to find a better world.
And there is something about, we were talking before about the amount of climate change and speculative fiction, New Zealand fiction, when it's talking about places you know, when it's talking about the coasts around where you live or landscapes that you know, it's very, very powerful, isn't it? You know, you must find that too, Mandy.
Yeah, and I wrote a two-book series that was set, in my mind, only 20 or 30 years in the future, which was sort of taking what was really worrying me about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the idea of losing our sovereignty and what would happen if our government was hijacked by corporations. And thinking about that in terms of New Zealand, I found it was more terrifying for people to read in a way, because it felt very, very believable. And you could sort of say, wow, if we go down this path, that might be where we end up. And so it's a way of challenging, in a way, for me. I get an idea and I think, well, what would be the worst case scenario of that, and how can we stop that? And then it becomes about, for me, I'm writing with young people, so how can those young people find a voice and be resilient in the face of that?
You mentioned the awards, Darusha, before, and just to explain that these are the Hugo Awards in particular, these are the international science fiction awards, effectively, aren't they? They're massive.
That's right. The Hugo Awards and the Nebula Awards are the two biggest awards for science fiction and fantasy. The Nebulas are given out by Science Fiction Writers of America, so it's a peer-voted award, whereas the Hugo Awards are voted upon by the members of that year's convention and the previous year's convention. And actually, no, that's not right. It's just that year's convention. And so it's a fan-voted award. So we all get a say in what we think is the best of the year.
And we should say the Julius Vogel Awards, which are the New Zealand Awards, they've been going for a while now.
They have, yeah. It's many years. And they will also be held at the convention. And anyone who's a member of Worldcon will be entitled to vote in the Sir Julius Vogel Awards as well, which is a great boon for local authors who might find their work on the ballot there, because it'll get all that wide exposure.
Just before we came to air, I was asking if there would be a degree of cosplay at the convention, because Comic-Con, we think of, it has its own kind of personality. I was just sharing that I remember Michael Hurst explaining he, when he was in Xena and going to these things, he saw somebody who was well over 6 foot, can't remember the metrics, tall, quite hairily chested, dressed as Xena. So you can see some curious things. Will there be an element of that? And is it, you know, is that part of it, just to be able to relax and have a bit of fun with like-minded people?
Absolutely. There's a masquerade, so there is a specific cosplay event at Worldcon, but also you will see people just wandering around the exhibition halls or going to panels in outfits. That's definitely costuming, and workshops on costuming and panels on costuming. It's very much a grassroots conference, so people who put forth ideas of about that want to talk about cosplay or want to talk about crafting or making art or making zines or making music, all of that is part of the convention.
I did warn you this question was coming, everybody. So were you to go and cosplay when you attend the convention, Mandy? What would you say?
Yeah, I found that one a really hard thing to think about. Well, it'll be my first time at anything like that, so I think I would probably go as an undercover spy and just check it out.
Well done, Hannah.
Oh, goodness. I have no idea.
You're right. A heap might work for you.
I can. Yeah. Why not? Go
and,
for it.
And Dorisha?
I've always suggested that there are a couple of my characters that I'm like secretly cosplaying all the time, so I'd probably just stick with that.
The other big thing I've noticed is that Lost in Space, they've brought back recently on Netflix, I think it is, Star Trek. Jean-Luc Picard is back. I think you might have seen it, Dorisha. I haven't yet, but I adore Star Trek, and Jean-Luc Picard was make it so, as far as I'm concerned. But it just feels like they're reaching back to some of these great stories. You won't remember the original Lost in Space, Hannah, I remember, but, I mean, are you interested in these, and do you think it's good for the literary side that there's so much of this on screen?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no, I wasn't around when it aired, but I actually grew up watching like old classic Doctor Who and old Black Seven and all that kind of thing. So, and old Star Trek. I loved old Star Trek. So yeah, and no, I love that. I love stories getting retold and reinvented. And yeah, I think there's something really interesting about that. The way that, on the one hand, speculative fiction is so much about looking ahead, but on the other hand, I think there is a real sense of when you look back and you take old stories and you can retell them and put a spin on them and do something interesting. Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
They can lose something along the way. Part of the Star Trek charm was the fact that you knew that that was polystyrene, you know, falling down as rocks. But the stories are, I mean, this is why Star Trek's had so many iterations, eh? The stories are fantastic, and we don't know what lies beyond. How can we possibly be the only planet with life forms on it? And I think this will continue to excite people. I think what I loved, District 9, I don't know if you saw it, but it seemed to me to subvert the genre where usually the aliens are bad people, other than E.T., for example. But in this one, of course, we were the bad guys. You know, we were the ones who imprisoned the visitors and treated them badly. So that it's just so fascinating because it does comment on us.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the great strengths of science fiction in particular, is that, I mean, lots of critics have pointed out that science fiction allows us to shine a light on the world in which we currently live by putting difficult to discuss topics outside of ourselves, by talking about aliens or the future or an alternate past, which makes it easier to talk about things because we're not talking about the person next door, but we can shine a light on what the person next door is really doing by doing that.
Mm. But we're talking about the convention. When is it on, Dorisha? People still have time to sign up?
Absolutely. It is from the 29th of July to the 2nd of August, and there's events all day, every day, for that entire period of time. A membership gets you attendance to every single thing that is going on at the conference, so it's all you can eat. It is currently $450 for adults, $250 for young adults born on or after 2000, or $225 for unwaged New Zealand residents. And there's likely to be a sponsorship program for people who need assistance from marginalized communities, because we'd like to bring a lot more diversity to the convention. So look for that on the website, which is conzealand.nz, for more information about that soon.
Very good. Lovely to talk to all of you. Dorisha Wayne, we've talked to Mandy Hager and Hannah Parry. You can hear more from them tomorrow at To Boldly Go, there and back again at 6 o'clock at Vic Books on the Papatea campus in Wellington. I should have said this is a mini version of a big conversation being held tomorrow. And as Dorisha mentioned, we are hosting Con Zealand?
Con Zealand.
Con Zealand. See, I've been puzzling over that. Con Zealand, now I know, in July.